webcasting to the world live the good news of God's righteousness for all humanity. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, beautiful humans. This is Greg Amberge sitting in for Glenn Klein tonight, who's at the undisclosed location in Wisconsin. I'm coming to you from beautiful Kings Mills, Ohio, and you're listening to the Glenn Klein Online broadcast from the Tampa studios in Florida. Today is July 22nd, 2009, and as Glenn says, it's the only July 22nd, 2009 in the history of humanity. And now it's our great pleasure to welcome in, live from Houston, Texas, the president of the Gospel Revolution, Michael Williams. How you doing, Mike?
Good evening, Greg. I'm doing really good. I guess I have to say I'm in an undisclosed location this evening.
Oh. Well, you should have disclosed that to me before I did the whole intro.
Yeah. Well, I'm in Houston, but my 1.5-year-old air conditioner completely went kaput today.
Oh,
and,
no.
This is Houston, Texas.
That's not good in July.
No, so I left home and found me a motel room. So I'm in an undisclosed hotel room. So.
Oh, okay. Well, we're having the weirdest weather in Ohio. It's a high of 65 degrees today in July. It's usually 90. And so we don't know what's going on around here.
Well, you know, I've been saying for the last year or so that they're going to change, because they can't prove global warming in the scientific community, they're going to change it to climate control. Rather
climate
than,
change, yes.
Yeah, climate change rather the terms that they've been using, because they can't prove global warming, so it's climate change. So anytime the climate changes, warm or cold, then it still gets to stay under the same category.
And it's all about getting that all-powerful federal money.
Yes, absolutely.
And,
it is, yeah. And, you know, I suppose if I was on that end of the gravy train, I'd be fighting just as hard for it. So, but, you know, that's my view, so...
So how have you been doing lately?
I have been doing really well. Things are going good here in Houston. And as far as I know, I don't know of any bad news anyway. And,
good. Well, if you're out there listening live tonight and you want to call us, the toll-free number is 800-436-3260. Once again, that's 800-436-3260. Give us a call. We would love to talk to you online tonight you know, get your questions for Mike or give us comments on something you might have heard lately. So, Mike, we are coming up. It's unbelievable how fast the time has gone. But last year, we had the convention in November, and it started the day after the election. It was the Wednesday after the November election of Barack Obama, and we had a great time in Houston. And
yes,
we are planning on doing it again. Do you have the dates?
Yes, I do. Let me get my calendar here just to make sure of the dates. That is in November again, and we're dropping back a week, and instead of starting on Wednesday, we're starting on Thursday, because we started on Wednesday to accommodate having some guest speakers in, and even though we will have guest speakers in, the schedule is going to fall on me just a little bit more because of what we're going to be doing, but it starts the 12th of November, and which is Thursday, and we go Friday, Saturday, and then until Sunday noon, and then we go home. We just had one person to sign up, and they've already bought their airline tickets, someone that was not there last year. So the two of them are scheduled to come and on their way. I think most everyone that was there last year is coming back and bringing somebody also, trying and bringing other people. This is really going to be a landmark in the history of Williams Ministries for sure, this particular one, because this is the location that I have decided to take the time to teach the entire book of Hebrews, verse by verse, and all 13 chapters.
Great.
Yeah, it's going to be an incredible time because, as everyone knows, the thing that comes out the best is when I am able to teach in context, which I always do. But when you can do an entire book, and the book of Hebrews is just massive, but if you approach it as it is written in story form, Greg. It is absolutely marvelous. And as you begin it, if you see that this is more of telling a story, it is so easy to follow. It is just amazing. And so that's what we're going to be doing. So I'm going to be taking probably 8 of the sessions from that Thursday night to Sunday morning, and then we'll have others filling in, after when I need to pass out somewhere. Yes, because it's going to be a grueling schedule for me, but I am. I just could not think of a better place. We actually had started and made some plans to do it in Canada in October, but I talked with Vic Dobrennan, and after he and I discussed it quite a bit, I just was not really content in my heart that was the proper venue to try to get this done because of the amount of time, because that is Friday through Sunday, and I would really have no breaks whatsoever. It would just almost be constant and continuous. And I don't want to cheat anybody out of my own energy levels just dropping out. I've never had that to happen yet. Seem to be energized.
This is really exciting to me because I know I heard a lot of your teaching when I was first coming to understand the gospel. I had gotten the fact that, but before I ever heard of you, I had gotten the fact that Jesus redeemed the world.
Yeah.
But There were a lot of, for instance, in the book of Romans, if you want to pull a verse from here and a verse from there in Romans, you can put people in tremendous bondage, just pulling a verse out of context. And I think in a lot of ways Hebrews is the same way, where if you don't read Romans from beginning to end and understand its context, Some of it, which I think Romans is one of the most liberating books in the Bible, it can become a book of bondage. And so I'm looking forward to hearing Hebrews done from start to finish.
Well, it's and
so that we place things in context and
is the same as the book of Romans. It is the it's tremendously, powerfully liberating. However, Hebrews 6, out of context, not the chapter, just about 4 verses in Hebrews 6. Hebrews 10, about 4 verses out of context, and Hebrews 12, about 4 verses out of context, are verses of doctrine for the church that in context is absolutely the opposite to what the church teaches out of the book of Hebrews. And they have, and even some of them have different variations and versions of Hebrews 6 and 10 especially, and then everybody just agrees that in Hebrews 12 that God is still chastising people, and which the Paul actually proves in context that the thing he's bringing to bear in our hearts and minds to understand is that is not happening anymore. I really kind of already know what I want to do.
I'm assuming that you are of the opinion that Paul wrote Hebrews.
Yes, I totally believe that Paul wrote Hebrews.
I do too, because I don't think there was anybody else at that time that got it the way Paul got it.
No, and there was no one who taught in that form ever. None of, well, the one thing I know for sure, if someone else wrote it, it was none of the other apostles. Because those who did write, the writings we're aware of, they have none of Paul's comparative teaching style. I actually had someone to explain to me that teaching style has a name, and I've totally forgotten about it, so I've got to find out again. But it is like a lost art for our civilization, our Western civilization, because we teach more from fact and argument of a point rather than embracing the other side and teaching from their point of view. And we really don't know how to do that. In our culture, we are taught how to defend our position against someone else, but we don't know how to present our position from the viewpoint of someone else. And
right.
That is exactly what Paul had the incredible art. It's so disarming. It is so, it penetrates to the very way that we think, not just what we think, but the way that we think. And once you understand that about Paul's teaching, it comes alive in just an incredibly dynamic way. But because we come at it from a Western civilization style of debate, we do not believe that Paul would take such a stance of something opposite to what he believes to prove a point. But that's exactly
right.
What he did over and over and over again.
Right. You're listening to the Glenn Klein Online webcast with Mike Williams tonight. If you'd like to call us and join us here on the show, the number is 800-436-3260. Again, 800-436-3260. We'd love to hear from you. Mike, this week, my kids got me a gift certificate to Half Price Books for Father's Day, and I hadn't used it yet. And I went in and was browsing in my favorite sections, which are basically politics and theology. And I found a book that I had to buy. It was called What Paul Meant, and it was by, I haven't read the book yet. It's the next
wow.
one I'm going to read, but I think I know what's coming. This guy is writing from the perspective of the Catholic Church, and he wants to explain that what Paul said, he didn't really mean. Because
yeah.
he couldn't possibly mean that God wasn't mad at us anymore.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think a lot of people have taken, one of the things that I've kind of become aggressive at recently when people want to get aggressive with me about what I believe, is I said, look, you've given me a few scriptures. I'm going to give you a whole bunch of them, and when you explain mine, I'll explain yours.
Yes.
And I've never had anybody come back. I give them a list, and I've never had anybody come back for round two.
Yeah.
And I wish
good.
They would. Because,
oh, absolutely.
If you read in context Romans and Hebrews and there's not much context that needs to be placed around Galatians. It just says what it says.
Yeah.
That we're free.
Yeah. There's a couple of places that if you don't read it in context in the book of Galatians and of course they're the famous verses out of Galatians that are never used in context. And the one about not taking this liberty as an occasion to the flesh. And
right.
if you take that out of context, it is saying, oh, well, yes, you're free, but don't go out and do something you should not, which I agree with that statement, but don't let this liberty become an occasion to the flesh. He is about going back under the law again, because
right.
the flesh...
Right, he's talking about sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
No,
it's
the flesh he's talking about is what he has already established it to be in that chapter. And then the other place in Galatians that totally is taken out of context is the list of people that aren't going to make it into the kingdom of God. And
right.
the interesting thing is that in context, Paul has already established in Galatians 1 and Galatians chapter 2 the comment that he makes to make people understand. He's talking about before he understood the gospel, while he was still under the law, while he was still a Pharisee. And the comment that he makes there, to make sure that you understand that, he also says in this list, and says, for you know that at this time this is what I was teaching. And so when you get the list, it's not a list of people that won't make it into the kingdom under the new covenant. It is a list of people that would not make it into the kingdom under the old covenant, which basically eliminated everyone, because he leaves the list open. He says, and much more, or however he puts it there in Galatians, in the sixth chapter. It's really amazing that, some, like you say, the book of Galatians ought to be just blatantly clear what it's about. But it's amazing how much legalism even comes out of the book of Galatians. That we Right. could read the book of Galatians in its entirety and believe that there's a list of people there who cannot get into the kingdom of God because of breaking God's laws.
Mike, we have the pleasure right now of joining... or having join us, Ken Vandeveer, Ken, pronounce your last name for me, please.
Vandeveer.
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 We hung out at the convention last year and had a good time.
We did.
And Ken, where are you calling from?
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma.
Where the wind comes sweeping through the plains.
It's been nice blowing today, too.
So what do you have for us tonight, Ken?
Oh, I just wanted to call and say hi. I've been away and haven't been able to join in on the broadcast in some time. And I told Mike recently that my computer wouldn't let me get online. He said, well, we just don't let everybody on. So I finally got it to work, and so I thought I'd better call in and chime in a little bit and see if I could just stir the pot a little bit. You guys are doing good.
We appreciate it, Ken.
I had a comment, Greg. You was talking about the book of Romans, and I've been kind of going through the book of Romans in the last month or so, and been doing a little teaching on the book of Romans. And there's something I wanted Mike to kind of square me away a little bit on. In the beginning of the book of Romans, where Paul talked about that he wasn't ashamed of the gospel, and there was a power in this gospel, the power of God was there, if you believe it.
Yeah.
And that is the, and sometimes guys question us about, you know, our belief in the gospel. What do you believe? And I get that question quite often. Just what is it that you believe? Well, I went through, and I'll ask Mike, and he'll gig me if I'm wrong. I went ahead and read through the book of that first part of Romans, and as Paul began to describe the man in Romans chapter 1, the latter part of it, all the way through chapter 2, and about midway through chapter 3. And there's something that, as he talked about and described that guy, and you guys are talking about those that are under the law and whatnot, nowhere in that description, Mike, of that guy, did I ever find love in this man.
Mm-hmm.
Did I miss something? But in that description, so I came back and concluded for myself that Adam's generation never knew love. There was natural affection,
mm-hmm.
you know what I'm saying, but I could not find love there. So when Adam transgressed and took on a good and evil judgment system, God actually said, I can't live there. I can't put my spirit in Adam. because of his judgment system. And therefore, if God is love, then his spirit is love. So the Adam man, in my conclusion, never knew love.
Yeah, I
did
don't
I
disagree.
Did I go out left field somewhere?
No, Kenneth, I don't disagree with that at all. I think there is many things of I would extend that even more than that. I think that Adam never knew what real love, joy, peace, long suffering, gentleness, meekness, faith, patience, or temperance is. Or to experience in any of the fruit of the Spirit.
Right.
So, I not only agree with you, but I would expand that to the entire description of the fruit of the Spirit.
Right.
Because it is the fruit of the Spirit, and love is a part of, you know, a lot of times when we start describing the fruit of the Spirit, then we say these are the fruits of the Spirit. But, see, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, meekness, faith, patience, and temperance is a fruit. They are not individual fruits.
Right.
As according to Paul's teaching, he said, for the fruit of the Spirit is. And it was a singular thing that wrapped up all of this into one thing. So I think that if what Paul said about the fruit of the Spirit is true, then love and all the rest of the things that are part of that single fruit would be missing along, or we either it's there or it's not there. And I think that probably the biggest thing that the fruit of the not having the fruit of the Spirit was not necessarily them not experiencing it between each other. I think they failed to experience it between themselves, between himself and God.
And God.
Because that was the issue. That's always been the issue in the revelation of the Scripture. It's not about the type of relationship we have with each other. It's about the type of relationship that we have with God himself, and including the fruit of the Spirit. So, we talked about it quite a bit as far as the gospel being the power of God unto salvation to him that believeth. That it's one of the most powerful statements in the Bible, and it is, of course, that continued salvation of the soul. And the only thing that we can believe of the gospel is what we're told the gospel is, and it's only two things. It's the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace.
And that has got a power, and it will take a physical manifestation if we
believe
it.
Yeah, and I
think the physical manifestation of that is what we share when we can understand that. It changes us. I think about what the gospel, how it changed me.
Yeah.
How it changed the way that it has a power if you can recognize the power. Now, in Colossians, Paul said that he's going to show us a mystery that God's Spirit was in us, God in you. If God is in me, and I understand that God is in me, God is love, so therefore his love is in me.
Absolutely.
Now,
and the revelation that we have to have is not about how much I am supposed to love you, or you are supposed to love me, or Greg. It is the revelation of how much God loves us.
And
not only the joy that I'm supposed to have, but the joy that God has toward me.
Right.
Because Jesus endured the cross for the joy that was set before him. And the peace, it's not the peace that you and I have between each other, it's the peace that God has toward us. Long suffering. It's not the long suffering we have with each other, and on and on and on and on.
Right.
But when we see that these are manifestations of God's Spirit toward us, then that's what influences the heart and mind to be established in that for each other.
Yeah.
But see, what most of us are trying to do in any form of religion or Christianity, we're trying to get people who love each other, who believe that God is angry.
Is angry with
them.
Absolutely.
And you can't love somebody else when you think God is angry with you. You can't
You've
be got to patient
know God
with
loves
somebody
you first.
Else.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And it's difficult to love someone else who you think God is angry at.
You cannot do it. It's virtually impossible.
You think, well, God can throw that person away, throw them away to hell. Why do I need to love them?
Absolutely. And that nature shows up in Christianity time and time and time and time again. I mean, on the outside, it's very syrupy, and it's, I mean, it would attract flies like honey. But, boy, once you're in the net, you see the wrath coming down, that if you disobey leadership or if you get out of line or you do the thing that's not acceptable to that church, you know, then you see there's none of the fruit of the Spirit there. So really the love that they have is not a fruit of the Spirit, because the fruit of the Spirit is a continuation. It's not, you know, it has no judgment in it. So, and it doesn't mean we're going to love or have perfect peace toward everybody on this face of this earth, but the only way that we are going to have any degree of true love, the love that type of love that is powerful, which is the gospel in itself, is if we understand all of these things coming from God to us first. Even if I hate you, I must know that God loves me. But you see, in counseling, whether you're coming at it from a secular point of view or even from a Christian point of view, they are going to start addressing the hatred. Well, you can address my hatred and my unforgiveness, you know, how that we, and how that's basically an old covenant principle. As Jesus said, if you don't forgive, God won't forgive you. So we're still approaching this as though we were, the kingdom of God did not get turned upside down on us. But it did. This is an upside down kingdom compared to what Jesus taught. It exists absolutely in a mirror image, totally reversed image of itself from what Jesus taught, such as that one thing that if you don't forgive, God won't forgive you. So, but see, I don't have the power to give something I don't have. And once I understand that even if I hate you, I've already been forgiven by God, and even if I don't love you, I am already loved by God, even if I don't love myself, which is the bigger problem usually for most of us. But see, the way to break through that is not to address the problem, the seen problem. The seen problem is that I don't have the ability to love, have no patience, and all of this stuff. But the key to a person's heart, where that the gospel becomes the power of God to save that soul, not their spirit, but their soul. It's not to redeem them. When we understand and preach with clarity that the gospel will not redeem anybody. The gospel.
That's really a clarifying statement right there.
Say that again. It's about this life. Not another
it absolutely is, because the next life was taken care of. The gospel will redeem nobody. It took the blood of Jesus to redeem the world.
Absolutely.
And us saying it to somebody doesn't make it do what... See, there is no gospel. If the gospel redeems, there is no gospel. That's just as simple as it gets. The gospel saves the soul of the redeemed. And it saves the soul of the redeemed when the redeemed are able to say so, that they know that they are redeemed,
that
I'm redeemed and they're redeemed and whoever I look at is redeemed. So it's in that subject of equality. But that the using the gospel to try to get the world redeemed has been the greatest misuse and the most gross misuse of the power of God. You see, we're trying to apply the power of God to something that's already been done. Because the gospel is the power of God. not to the redemption of the spirit, but the gospel is the power of God to the saving of the soul.
Of the soul.
Yes.
And that's the person that's receiving it. And we in the Christian community has tried to use it in the context of redeeming you.
Absolutely.
And you've been redeemed.
Absolutely.
It's about the soul. It's about this life. It's about what's happening now. But, you know, Mike, what brought this to my forefront of my mind, I guess, is a way to say that. I married a young couple. And as I was doing that, I thought, this young couple has no idea where this marriage is going and the depth that it can take. You know what I'm saying? In that relationship. It's the same thing when we first address the gospel. You do not know how deeply you can love until you really find out how much God really loves you.
Oh, I think you're exactly right, Ken.
We just reach, you know what I'm saying, and you just can grow in this relationship with God if you keep taking and just learning how much God really loves you. Studying words, I got into this word adoption. What does that mean? What did it mean in Paul's day? You know, when he talked about the adoption. Listen, if God has adopted me, then I deserve all the rights, all the benefits, everything of the Godhead today. I don't need to wait. Huh?
Yeah. Right.
Am I getting it too hard?
No. Sounds like good news to me.
It's mine today. I don't have to wait.
Yep.
Just grasp it, believe it, address it. You know what I'm saying? Live in it.
Yes.
Well, I won't take all your time. I just wanted to call and say hi and visit for just a minute.
Well, Ken, you sparked something that I think is going to give me something to study now for the next month.
Ken always does.
I want to go back and listen to the last 10 minutes and see if that was as rich as I thought it was.
I just want to stir the pot a little.
Now, Ken,
yes,
did you hear our announcements about the November convention?
Yeah, plan on being there.
Yeah, goodness gracious, doing the entire book of Hebrews, and we're so looking forward to you being there.
Yeah,
and of course we want you to share some while you're there too.
We'll do that.
Let me tell you, of course, a side note, just to let you know that these, you know, all of you guys are people that I know.
I know.
And some of the others will understand this, too. One of my hobbies, and I think it's probably gospel-connected because I think that knowing who you are is so vitally important, that I love studying genealogy. So I actually asked Ken, his last name so intrigues me, that I asked him if I could do a genealogy search on his family. So he gave me some family, and man, and Ken couldn't go back past Kansas. So after I got, and there's no way to finish this, it's just so amazing, but I traced his family back to New Jersey, and from there back to Holland, and his name...
Well, I was going to say, Ken doesn't sound like he's from New Jersey.
Yeah, he does not sound, and the name Vandeveer doesn't sound like it's from Texas either. So, but the term Vandeveer, it actually started out as three words. That's Van der Veer, and it and what I found out for Ken, what it was, and the term Veer means crossing. I think that's what it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, crossing. Huh?
Yeah. And it means, and van and der is of the, so it was of the crossing. And there's a town of Veer in Holland. So I was actually able to track his name all the way back into the 1400s or something like that with almost direct family ties. It was a wonderful search. I've tried to do Glenn's. You'll find this funny, Ken. I tried to do Glenn's. But there are so many, and they're all, of course, Glenn's, both sides of Glenn's family are from Chicago, every single one of them. And I was able to get back three generations, And there are so many Josephs and Benjamins, Kleins, all born the same year and around the same month, that nobody knows which one was actually their relative. Right? So they all, one thing I found out about Jewish families is they all got the same name. And there was just too many. I was so disappointed because I thought, you know, this rich Jewish heritage, I bet I'll be able to follow it, you know, back to who knows where. But probably can, but I just don't know which Benjamin is his great-great-grandfather. There's three of them born the same month and the same year in Chicago.
Well, Ken, thank you very much for calling us.
Okay, I enjoyed it, guys.
We'll see you at the convention, and we'll free up the line now. If you'd like to join us tonight, you can call 800-436-3260, 800-436-3260 on the toll-free hotline. You know, Mike, my kids don't have they don't understand the concept of toll-free. Because
right?
Cell phones, everybody's long distance is free.
Oh, yes? No roaming charges?
They don't understand that concept.
Yeah. I bet they don't know what rotary dial is either.
That's my phone. I'm going to switch phones just a moment. Sorry about
that. Well, that was buzzing sound we were getting.
I had a low battery.
Yeah, there you go.
That's better.
Yes, it is much better. Thank you.
Well, that is amazing when you think about the fruit of the Spirit and mankind living without that fruit of the Spirit.
Yeah.
Because one thing Glenn is always saying is that mankind is getting... this is amazing that a Jewish guy would have this perspective because of all the things that Jewish people have gone through and all that. But Glenn keeps pointing out to me that historically the world is getting kinder and the world is getting freer.
Absolutely.
And you may not see that unless you go back and you look at history and just how brutal the world was,
yep.
The whole world,
yep.
And then how pockets of freedom broke out and democracy was born and the world's getting kinder and the world's getting freer and the world's getting through the internet it's getting smaller.
Absolutely.
But maybe that fruit of the Spirit is our destiny.
Yes,
that we come to act out what God has placed within us.
I believe that is correct. In fact, I think that the weird thing is that we do not preach about anybody's actions or deeds toward each other. This is the bizarre thing. Yet, my entire labor that I do in the gospel is to see that result. Now, I never address it. I never address issues because I found out that the heart changes when the gospel comes in, no matter what the issues are. I had my
exactly.
friend, just a case in point, I had my friend Mike Matzey to send me a link today, and he wanted me to watch it. And it was a gentleman who was a Christian who was presenting the point that, you know, that the world had been, that Christianity had been wrong on slavery and wrong on women's rights, and gave the list. And he said, you know, is it possible that they're wrong about gay rights also? And was trying to present the side of the case which the gay community and the Christian community, the gay community, tried so desperately to present. That homosexuality was never against the law, and he sent it to me and asked me for my comments, and I replied to that. And you'd think that as a gay man, I would be saying yay, yes, yeah, thank God
right.
somebody's saying it. But I found it offensive because
right.
I saw nothing in it but self-righteousness. because all they're trying to do is be one more group that excuses itself from the law. And when you
right.
excuse yourself from the law, you lose the power of the grace of God. And so I don't want anybody giving me any excuses for my sexuality. I don't want somebody to change God's law. Because if you change God's law and it's absolute condemnation of everybody, then you change God's grace and it's absolute acceptance of everybody. So while
it sounds good
that we are making this progress, and you know how we used to condemn divorced people and now we don't, and we used to condemn people because of the color of their skin and now we don't, we're making progress. No, we're not. We're diluting the power of the gospel, because by taking it issue by issue, we are making it subject to what society thinks about these issues, instead
right.
of taking it from the true view and the opinion of God, that all of these issues are now non-issues in the eyes of God, which is a much stronger position to come from. When we start battling for gay rights to try to prove to people that the scriptures do not condemn homosexuality, I think we are condemning ourselves by doing it. And
I was
only
shocked when I first heard you say that. Right after, I guess it was right after, you publicly acknowledged your sexuality, and I thought, well, this is I was expecting that from you, this justification stuff of it really wasn't an abomination in the Old Testament and all that, and
yep.
you came out and said what you just said there, and it shocked me because it was such an acceptance of the gospel instead of because really the law, Mike, was not something that we want to defend anymore.
No, that's right.
As being God's, perfect ideal or whatever. Because the law discriminated against people who just had birth defects or
Absolutely.
Women who were menstruating.
Yep.
Or
even
just
the birthmark, which we don't even consider.
Things.
Yeah. And even just birthmarks, which we don't even consider a defect.
Right, or having a flat nose.
Yeah, I mean, and these are just characteristics of humanity, just being human. So, yeah, it really disturbs me, you know, and I think Mike got the response that he kind of thought that I would have on this. And sometimes Mikey likes baiting me on those things, just even though he knows what I'm going to say, he likes hearing the response anyway. But because the gospel is, I don't have a need to justify myself. I refuse
right.
to justify myself, because if I justify myself, I am condemning myself by my own mouth, as the scriptures say. And I don't
right.
want to condemn myself, so the only way that I can truly condemn myself is to justify myself. I never will forget learning that verse out of the Psalms. He that justifieth himself condemneth himself with his own mouth. And I never knew how pertinent that was going to be in the future when I was memorizing these verses when I was with the children of God back in the early 70s. And but it really is true. I tell you, the moment I hear self-justification, I hear insult to the gospel. I hear insult to the grace of God. How dare anybody try to justify themselves and eliminate themselves from God's wrath of the law through their own justification? That's
right.
sick. That's perverse. It's not the sexuality that's perverse. It's the self-justification that is perverse. That's true perverseness. In Paul's language, that's the term he uses pertaining to those who take those types of stance. He says it's a perverse way of looking at the issue, and perverted it is. That is for sure.
Yeah. Yes. Wow, you're listening to the Glenn Klein broadcast. Mike, are you already preparing some of the stuff from Hebrews? You want to give us a preview, or do you want to keep that for the convention? Or
yeah, you know, like I was saying, that the book of Hebrews is in story form, and I think that's the thing that people are going to be the most surprised about, is looking
well,
at this.
Explain that, if you would.
Well, it's like as it starts out, how that God, who at sundry times spoke to us in many ways, has now spoke to us through His Son Jesus Christ, and then begins to go into. See, it starts in a story form about how God speaks to people and how He did it before, and now the change. This is the change that has happened.
Now He speaks to us through His Son.
Yes, and so the change in that is the drastic thing. But you see, the God speaking to us, here's the such powerful thing that we have to understand, is that God did not speak to us through the teachings of Jesus. God speaks to us through the sacrifice of Jesus.
Exactly, because that's what's so funny about the whole "What Would Jesus Do?" movement.
Oh,
you have
yes.
no idea what Jesus would do. He did
some crazy stuff.
He said some crazy things. He said some mean things.
Yeah.
And
you take
and
that little
God
rubber band off. Go ahead.
What was that?
I said he'd take that little rubber band from around your wrist and wrap it around your neck.
Yeah, exactly. Getting people to understand that what Jesus said a lot of times was just teaching the law the way it was supposed
yep.
to be. He wasn't telling us, "That's how I want you to live."
Yep.
He was teaching the law hard.
Yes, because we had to realize why we needed a Redeemer and what He was going to redeem us from. And,
right.
You know, that division point is so vitally important for us to understand. Every religion, you know, Greg, it's so weird. Every religion on earth respects and loves the teachings of Jesus.
That's an interesting point. Exactly.
Every one of them.
Exactly.
None of them. They will all say, "Oh, we know that the teachings of Jesus are correct." Islam respects the teachings of Jesus.
Right.
Islam respects and embraces the teachings of Jesus. So it's like, okay, now is there something wrong with that? Yes. And in another way, no, there's not. They should, because their religion is based in legalism, and who better's teachings to embrace than the teachings
right.
of Jesus? However, they have to participate in them selectively, because if they participated in them completely, they would be left knowing, "I need a Redeemer.
Exactly.
I am screwed."
Exactly.
But that is the conclusion of the teachings of Jesus. And I think I mentioned this last week, but I have one of my friends, longtime friends from many, many years ago. You know, and a lot of people who listen to me, they get freed enough to where that they start studying other teachings, and you know, and what they think about certain teachings, and he decided that he wanted that Madonna, you know, was somebody that he really respected, and so he decided that he was going to start studying the Kabbalah, and he said, "Yeah, they don't mention Jesus at all, but they constantly talk about Satan." And how that it's Satan in your life, and every sickness is Satan, every obstacle is Satan, everything that happens in your life that is not something good is Satan in your life. It's like, well, that's
like
exactly.
A church lady.
Yes, absolutely. Could it be Satan?
Could it be Satan?
Yeah. So, I mean, she teaches Kabbalah too, so. But it was amazing to watch him have the freedom to go in depth into this teaching and get thrown right back out into the gospel. Because there is nothing else that brings freedom. Interesting to study, but no freedom is in. I mean, the emphasis is on the negative. And here's where religion lies. See, the Kabbalah emphasizes the evil and how to fight it constantly. Then another religion will emphasize the good and how to do it. Then there are the religions such as what we came out, is that it's more of the battle between good and evil.
Right.
And we're constantly fighting that and trying to get good to overcome evil all the time.
Oh, my God, I'm so glad I'm not fighting that battle anymore.
Isn't that amazing?
Oh.
But see, only the gospel frees you from the knowledge of good and evil in relationship with God. Now, people just get torqued out of shape. What do you mean we're freed from the knowledge of good and evil? How in the world am I going to know the difference between right and wrong? It's like, what kind of human being are you?
Exactly.
That you need a set of rules to tell you that something is wrong. I just cannot imagine that there is a heart that when they do things that are contradictory to their own life and to the life of others, that their heart doesn't know it. And they're deliberately stepping outside those bounds. They want to do that. Or based on their religion, that what they're doing is absolutely good. It's one or the other. So it really is an amazing set of circumstances when you start looking at the other religions of the world. And no matter how good they are, we might see them as something good because it leaves something out that Christianity drills down on people, but it's going to emphasize something else. It's going to herniate, if you will, in some other area and put people in bondage. Buddhism, as our friend Chris Harrington, who spoke with the Dalai Lama and sat under his teachings personally, in Tibet or wherever he was when he was studying on these things, and he was the one that told us that that even Buddhism has a hell, and it's 6, 7, or 8 different levels of hell, but it's 6, 7, or 8 different levels of cold. It's not hot and fire. So they say they don't preach hell, but they preach a hell that's cold, and it's 7 different layers of cold. It always herniates somewhere. And the gospel is the only stabilizing force for the heart. That's the reason I am so glad that we're able to say so definitively that the gospel will not redeem you.
Yes.
Because then, Gregory, what we are able to do is focus the gospel, or let the gospel do what it was intended to do, and that is save the soul. When we are out expressing unbelief in the gospel, we cannot expect the power of the gospel to work in our hearts. You might say, well, how would we be expressing unbelief in the gospel? By trying to use it to get people redeemed.
Right.
We're literally expressing our unbelief.
That's so true. One of my friends this week, who I haven't talked to in many years, but I knew from my childhood, and he said, when I listen to you talk and I listen to what you write, it's almost like you don't believe in religion at all.
Yeah, that's right.
And I said, well, that's my goal. That's where I'd like to get to. I said,
Thank you very much.
A lot of it. Maybe God's saving me from it, but the gospel is saving me from it.
Yes.
But there's still some in there that needs to get out.
Always.
I thought that was a compliment. He didn't mean it that way.
He didn't mean it as a compliment. I'm sure he did.
No, he didn't mean it as a compliment at all. He's worried that I'm too free and very concerned that I don't go to church anymore on Sundays.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that amazing that we would narrow down the power of the gospel as something confined to a place you visit once a week? Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Just unbelievable.
Yes,
you know, if church works, we ought to be there at least 90% of the time and spend only 10% of the time out in doing our work. If church works, why do we only go an hour a week?
Yeah.
That is the greatest expression, Gregory, that it don't work. It doesn't do anything for anybody. Because
right.
If that 1 hour worked, we would do it many more hours. We would wind up doing it 90% of the time, which is the very same thing I've said about tithing. If tithing worked, why would we stop with 10%?
Exactly.
And why would I ask you for money if I truly believe that tithing works?
Right. I would have to do is give
find
my
somebody
tithe,
to give
and
it to.
I wouldn't have to worry about you.
Absolutely. Forget about asking for money. These hypocrites, these audacious hypocrites who say that they believe in tithing and then ask for money. That's mind-boggling. That's and people try to say, well, if you were preaching the gospel, God would provide. Well, I'm sorry, I don't believe that. God doesn't support ministries. People support ministries. People make a decision as to what they're going to do. God doesn't make a decision whose ministry is going to get money and whose ministry is not. And so I am completely free in my heart for asking for support for Mike Williams' ministry, teaching ministry. We are not a counseling ministry, though we do a whole lot of that just through the gospel itself. Counsels the heart, if you will. We're not a healing ministry, although I'm very grateful for any healing that takes place. We're not a prosperity ministry. We are a gospel ministry. And there's only two things called the gospel, and that's the gospel of peace and the gospel of grace. But, these contradictions are just amazing.
You're listening to the Glenn Kline online broadcast tonight with Mike Williams. Mike, as we wrap up tonight, we want to remind everybody again that our convention is coming up in
November.
It's going to be the 12th through the 15th at noon, so Thursday through Sunday. And is it going to be at the same place again, the Marriott in Houston?
It's the Marriott Greens Point. Then we'll have the site attached to the website very soon, to where that you can go on there and just put in your reservation. And let me tell you something. I've been doing some searches for others for flights, and right now it just seems like the flights are really inexpensive. And there's some folks coming down from Billings, Montana, who were not there last year. In fact, we have two couples coming down from Billings, Montana that were not there last year. And I got online while I was with them, and we found a flight for them for like $250-something, I think, round-trip flights out of Billings, Montana to Houston. So it seems like that right now there are some really good flights, and waiting.
And if you fly into the George H.W. Bush Airport.
Yes.
There's free shuttle service from the hotel.
Absolutely.
They pick you up right at the airport and drop you off right at the front door. It's a great thing.
And it's 10 minutes from the airport to the Marriott Greens Point, which is the reason we picked it. Yes, please do not fly into Hobby. You will have an hour drive, and you'll have to rent a car. And
right.
And with this, everything you will need will be right there. There's little restaurants close by. And also the Marriott there, of course, serves really, really good food. We'll have some meals together, some breakfast and some dinners together. that it will be optional
yeah,
once
we
you
took
get there?
Last year at the end of the evenings, we went to the lounge and just continued the conversation on from there. It was really
yes.
good.
The convention just continued, didn't it? Yeah, it's...
Well, thank you very much, Mike, for joining us tonight. We'd like to thank Ken Vandeveer.
Yeah.
I'm looking right at it. I can't say it. Thanks to Ken for stirring up the pot a little bit and getting us on track. And until next week, we'd just like to say thanks for joining us. And shalom, everybody.